stay tuned for Mystery Theater.
Marshall. Voodoo is a word to conjure with, and conjure is the right word, because the high priest of voodooism was called a conjure man. It was he to whom the practitioners of voodoo turned when they wanted spells cast or lifted, enemies punished, or love affairs promoted. As voodoo spread northward from the island of Haiti to the Americas, and particularly to New Orleans, it should be noted that its most powerful conjurers were women. Our mystery drama, The House of the Voodoo Queen, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Murray Burnett and stars Jordan Charney and Joan Loring. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
If you take a look at the 1975 cars, you'll notice a European influence. And there are some new American cars that rival the Europeans, one being Buick's new Skylark SR, with its touring car interior and spirited little V6 engine. But don't think of the Skylark SR as a European tourer. We're proud of the fact that it's a Buick. You will be, too.
Buick, dedicated to the free spirit in just about everyone.
Suburban Savings in New Jersey is growing even larger with two new office openings on Saturday, December 21st, and you're invited to both of them. In Deal on Atlantic Avenue at Neptune Avenue. In Somerset on Easton Avenue in the Rutgers Plaza Shopping Center. To celebrate, Suburban is giving away free silver dollars to the first 100 adult guests at each office. There's also a whole selection of free gifts for you to choose from when you open a new account. And for a limited time, Suburban is offering a top 8.17% annual effective yield on 7.75% savings certificates, guaranteed 6 years, $1,000 minimum. Early withdrawal is subject to a penalty. Each office is going to give away a free all-expense-paid vacation for two in Bermuda, and you don't have to be a customer to win. Just come in and fill out a coupon. Full details at the bank office. Celebrate the grand opening of Suburban Savings' two new offices on Saturday, December 21st, in Deal on Atlantic Avenue at Neptune Avenue, in Somerset on Easton Avenue in the Rutgers Plaza Shopping Center.
All of us have pictured in our imagination the perfect dream house. The castle in Spain, or the little cottage on the mountaintop overlooking that blue lake in the green valley. But few of us are ever fortunate enough to have our dream come true. Douglas and Helen Fenton were two young people who had that good fortune. And as we first meet them, they're having the happy experience of being shown through their perfect house in New Orleans, which they've acquired through the death of an uncle Douglas Fenton never knew existed.
And this was used as a music room in the old days.
Oh, I can just see it. Can't you, Doug?
It's a beautiful room. Nice and sunny.
I think I've given you a thorough tour of your new home. And unless you have any questions, I should be getting back to the office.
I promise you'll be our first dinner guest. Won't he, Doug?
Oh, you bet. There are still a lot of questions I have about Uncle Timmy that I'll want answered.
I am at your service. Good day, and good luck, and good health. Don't bother, Mr. Fenton. I know the way out.
Oh, Doug, I'm so happy. I just love this house. Wait till you see what I do with it. What was that?
The movers?
Don't be silly, darling. They left hours ago. Remember?
Probably something fell.
It can sound like something falling. Doug, I'm so glad you're home.
How did it go today, darling? Any better?
I really can't tell you, Doug, because I'm so ashamed. I Well, I didn't stay home. I guess I'm just a big coward.
Oh, don't be silly. Anyone would be frightened by what goes on in this place.
Doug. Oh, what are we going to do?
I told you. We'll sell the house and find another.
Did you reach Mr. Lamour's?
No luck. When I called, he was out. And when he called me back, I was in a meeting and couldn't take the call, but he promised to... Oh, that must be him now. Hello?
Mr. Fenton? Lemur's here. Sorry we missed connections all day. What can I do for you?
Mr. Lemour's, I don't know how to tell you this, but, well, Helen and I think the house is haunted.
If you don't like the house, you can always put it on the market.
We love the house. That is, we thought we loved it. Well, you can't live in a house where all night long you hear screams and chain rattlings and during the day thumpings and... Well, there's an odor, an indescribable odor of rot and decay that sweeps through the house from time to time. It's here now, as a matter of fact. And we wanted to know if you had had any complaints...
The house has been empty for years.
Well, maybe that's the reason. Have you heard anything that... Well, about the house being haunted?
You're serious?
Of course.
Then I can only tell you that feeling the way you do, you shouldn't stay in the house. I'll give you the names of some real estate agents who might be willing to handle it.
Have a seat, Mrs. Fenton. Tell me how I can help you.
Well, we have a house we'd like to put on the market.
Well, of course. Would you give me the location?
It's in an old neighborhood. 66 Delacorte Street.
Yes, I know the house. I thought it was vacant.
Well, we just moved in. My husband's uncle left in the house, and we decided to move to New Orleans and live here.
Miss Fenton, I'll be honest with you. The house has a bad reputation.
I don't understand.
I think you do. Any honest real estate agent would have to warn a prospective buyer that there are definite problems connected with your house.
Of course. I understand that.
Well, then you also understand I'd have to offer the house way below the market value.
How far below?
I don't think I could ask more than $20,000.
$20,000? My husband and I wouldn't be interested at that figure. Thank you for your time.
Oh, not at all. If you change your mind, you know where to find me.
Now, how can a pretty girl look so unhappy after a dinner like this?
When the girl is thinking of going home to a house that scares her and that no real estate agent wants to handle.
Relax. Look, we'll put an ad in all the papers and sell it ourselves. You know, it might be better that way. We save a commission.
Oh, darling.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I love you. You take such a big load off my shoulders and make everything seem so easy.
Well, isn't that what husbands are for? Hmm?
I can think of a few other uses.
And that's one reason why I love you.
When are we going to put the ads in?
First thing tomorrow.
Doug, did you leave our faucet on?
What?
The water. Don't you hear it?
Yes. Yes, I hear it. Did you check the bathroom?
I was afraid to. Anyway, it certainly doesn't sound as if it's coming from the bathroom.
No. No, it seems to be right over the bed.
Stand it, Doug. Can't you do something?
Why, I don't know what to... Tell her to go away, whatever it is. Do you think that would work?
We should call the police.
Oh, I would. I would if I felt they could help. Whatever it is hasn't hurt us, only annoyed us. So I think maybe if we show we're not bothered, the noises and the smells will stop.
I don't think I can do that, Doug.
Yeah, I know. That's why we put the ads in the papers.
Oh, Doug. Hold me. hold me close. What's that?
Look, it's ghosts. They've come to the front door.
But who could come at this time of night?
You talk as if it were 3 a.m. It's only 10:30, and this is a late town. I suppose I'd better see who it is.
I'll come with you.
Be right with you.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I never dreamed I'd be waking you. I'll come back some other time. Oh, no. We weren't asleep. Come on in. Come in. It was the advertisement in the Picayune. The house is for sale. Oh, yes, it is.
I'm Doug Fenton, and this is my wife, Helen.
I'm Zoe Lemaitre. You're interested in the house? I am.
Are you married?
No. I'm quite alone.
But this is a large house. The ad described how many...
Darling, I'm sure Miss Lemaitre knows how large the house is. She's interested. I know the house is large, but I'm hooked on antiquities. I think before we actually get down to business, I should tell you. I know all about the reputation this house has in this city. You do? I do.
And you still want to buy it?
If I can afford it. And I think that the only way you're going to dispose of it is to sell it very cheaply.
Miss Lemaitre, just how cheaply are you thinking? Or aren't you prepared to make an offer?
Oh, I'm not only prepared. I brought this certified check along.
You've made up your mind.
Here it is.
Oh, wow.
Massey? $7,800. Why, that's just...
A fair offer. Considering the reputation of the house. Doug? Doug Fenton?
Miss Lemaitre?
Are you too angry with me to join me in a café sip?
It's my wife who's angry.
Oh.
I never can stay mad at girls as pretty as you.
Thank you. Do you find me fascinating, Mr. Fenton?
Completely. I trust I have the same effect on you.
Oh. It's not you who interests me. It's your house.
Why?
I can't tell you.
Everyone in this town seems to know what's wrong with my house, except Helen and me.
They know there's something wrong. That's all they know.
Oh, and you know more, beautiful Zoe. Hmm? Ah, yes. Behind those beautiful green eyes lies secret.
And your attitude is one reason why I can't tell you. You wouldn't believe me anyway.
Try me.
All right. The house you're living in doesn't really belong to you.
Oh, I have a deed that says it does.
That house was stolen from the daughter of Marie Laveau.
Marie Laveau? Who's she?
The most powerful Bokor in the history of voodoo. The beautiful black woman who ruled as the voodoo queen of New Orleans for half a century. You, Douglas Fenton, are living in the house of the voodoo queen. And she wants you out.
When a landlord wants to evict a tenant, the tenant can always take his case to court. But when the fanciful notion is advanced that the landlord is really a voodoo queen who lived back in the 19th century, that tenant has a problem. I'll be back shortly with a terrifying solution found by Doug Fenton in Act Two.
Ever see a beer drinker pour his beer real easy down the side of the glass? Maybe you do it yourself. If so, the Budweiser brewmaster thinks you're missing something, especially if you're a Budweiser drinker. You see, Bud is brewed, so it will kick up a healthy head of foam. Exclusive beechwood aging and natural carbonation make it a lively brew. Well, anyway, pouring Bud plunk down the middle of the glass helps bring out the best in that clean white Budweiser foam and real beer aroma. It also helps you get the full benefit of a taste, smoothness, and drinkability you'll find in no other beer at any price. Remember, brewing beer right does make a difference. Next time, pour that Budweiser right down the middle and see for yourself. Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
There's a most impressive scene going on nightly on 14th Street at Luchow's. Every night at 7, the lights from the great Luchow dining hall dim, and in a hush, the Victor Herbert strings play Silent Night. And suddenly, the world's largest indoor tree is aglow with 1,100 magnificent decorations, as well as the delightful carousel of nativity figures. That's how it's been at Luchow's for 92 Christmases. And the food, ah, such food, roast Watertown goose, suckling pig, the schnitzels and venison, and for dessert, the lingonberry pancake flambéed with Cointreau. Your spirits will soar as the air is filled with the holiday music provided by the Gentle Strings and the Lusty Oompa Band. There are complete dinners at $6.95, and a celebration beer flows like wine. Luchow's is a month-long Christmas festival. As always, there's free valet parking at dinner. Call Gary for reservations at 477-4860. That's 477-4860. Plan ahead for Christmas and New Year's open house feasting at Luchow's, a way of life for 92 years, located at 110 East 14th Street.
Hey, ma'am, what's for dinner? Hey, ma'am, what you got?
You can feed a crowd for the holidays at a reasonable cost if you plan your menus around ShopRite savings. ShopRite Grade A oven-ready turkeys, just 47 cents a pound for 17 to 22-pound tops. Mohawk 3-pound canned ham, just $3.99. Chestnuts for your stuffing, just 69 cents a pound. Boneless beef shoulder or bottom round roasts, $1.29 a pound. Fresh grapefruit, 10 for 99 cents. And savings on dips, cheeses, cold cuts, and all the trimmings for a bountiful meal. Right now at your ShopRite.
She loves the family. She wants the best. She does all that she can do. She lets ShopRite do the rest. Hey, ma, what's for dinner? ShopRite has the answer.
This is WOR New York, an RKO General Station, your station for Mystery Theater.
Voodoo is an African religion which has been variously described and downgraded by such descriptive phrases as black magic, mumbo jumbo, or a mess of meaningless ritualistic incantations practiced and believed in only by the ignorant and superstitious. Nevertheless, it survives. Douglas Fenton has been told that voodoo presents a very real and serious threat to his living in a house he inherited in New Orleans. But Douglas Fenton is a skeptic.
You're too much, Zoe.
Oh?
But you must really think I'm the biggest sucker you ever saw if you expect me to sell you a $60,000 house for $7,800 because of some crazy story about a voodoo queen. Wait, where are you going?
Before I called you ignorant. Now I know you're a fool. And I don't like fools.
Sit down.
Go home, Douglas. Go home to your pretty, silly wife. And the two of you can sit and laugh at Marie Laveau. But in the night when your blood runs cold and a nameless terror shakes your bones, remember me. And if you can, remember to call on the cochonnerie and pray they show you mercy.
Hey, you think this stuff is for real, don't you?
I was born in New Orleans, as were my mother and grandmother. We know the power of the cochonnerie.
If I apologize, will you sit down?
I will sit, but it's useless. You will still disbelieve.
Can you blame me? I'm a product of the 20th century. You tell me a pretty wild story and mention things I've never even heard of, like this cochonnerie.
The cochonnerie are an ancient society of voodoo priests.
And what's your connection with them?
They asked me for a favor. It's not wise to oppose them.
And the favor was to buy my house, huh? Well, why? Why do they want it?
Because it was the home of Marie Laveau. Because it really belongs to her, and they want it as a shrine. And their headquarters. What are you doing at this cafe this afternoon?
Hmm?
What took you out of your office?
Oh, a problem. I've always found that a walk and some fresh air helps me.
Huh. Don't you find it strange that your work should lead to the back streets And this particular cafe?
I wanted to get away from crowds.
And how was it that I happened to be here?
Well, you can answer that better than I.
Yes, I can. Read this note. I received it at noon.
Café Lafitte, 3:30. Fenton will be there.
Oh.
Helen? Helen, darling. Helen, what's the matter?
Oh, Doc. Oh, I'm so glad you're home. So glad. Look. Look there on the floor.
What the devil is it?
What does it look like?
Like a chicken that has had its neck wrung.
That's what it is.
And I found it on our doorstep. Along with the chicken, I found this.
This looks like a child's drawing of some kind of snake.
No, not a child, Doug. Not a child. Now, according to the police, these are voodoo symbols. Have you ever heard of voodoo?
Strange that you should mention that. I had a crash course earlier today.
What?
The girl who came here to buy our house? I ran into her today at a sidewalk cafe. She seemed to know a lot about it. She told me...
Yes?
No, it's not important. What did the police say?
Well, that these were voodoo symbols, that they may be the work of a prankster, or it might be a believer in someone who thinks voodoo magic actually works. Someone with a grudge against us.
The Cochon Gris. I hoped I'd find you here.
Why, Mr. Fenton, what a surprise.
Now, look, don't try to put me on. You probably have a piece of paper on you somewhere that reads Café Lafitte, 822. Fenton will be there.
You're really rather charming, you know, Doug.
Well, I try. Particularly when someone looks like you. You know, I've never met a girl who even came close to you in looks. I think you've bewitched me.
Of course. But what have you done to me? Put a love spell on me?
I think you're trying to tell me something.
And if I am?
We should find a more private place.
I shouldn't tell you this.
Hmm.
Oh, Doug, darling, I never felt like this before in my life.
Mm.
Never with anyone.
Oh, you're a beautiful liar. But I love to hear it.
I mean it, Doc.
Oh, you're an astonishing girl. Really? We've been here for 2 hours, and you've never once mentioned my wife.
Oh, should I have?
Well, let's just say it's unusual.
Oh, you're an experienced adulterer.
Ouch. Now, why did I bring her name up?
I don't know.
I do. It's because I'm worried about the things she finds on our doorstep.
What sort of things?
Well, a chicken with its neck wrung. A piece of cardboard with a crudely drawn snake. Oh, yes, that means something to you, doesn't it?
Spells. They're put in or near people's houses for a purpose.
And they mean something.
Of course.
I'm almost afraid to ask.
You should be. The chicken with its neck wrung means death.
Helen? Helen, are you all right?
Yes, Doug, darling, I'm fine.
Oh. Well, how was today, huh? I mean,
Well, if you mean, were there any other little presents left on our doorstep? No.
Well, that's good news. Maybe they've stopped.
I won't complain. After all, you're home early tonight.
What does that mean?
Oh, nothing, really. It's just that you've been working so late at the office so often, and I realize that I'm not as attractive as I used to be, and... Also, I guess I'm not much fun.
Yeah, I hate to hear you talk like that.
I hate to talk like that. Maybe I wouldn't if...
If what?
I know how attractive you are. And there are a lot of beautiful women in the world. And
oh, please. Please, this isn't necessary, Helen.
I'm afraid it's very necessary. Will you stop seeing Zoe Lemaitre?
as mad as anyone can get and still not commit murder. It's your associates. Those voodoo priests you tell me are called the Cochon Gris.
They're not my associates. Sometimes they ask me to do favors for them, and I know it's not wise to refuse.
Oh, they must really be grateful to you. They've rewarded you by telling Helen every time we met.
Oh.
Tell them to lay off.
I won't.
You won't? What do you want to do, break us up?
You know better than that, Doug. It's just that I don't want to make a fool of myself. If I go to the Cochon Gris with this request, they will simply tell me what I've been telling you all along. If you wanted to stop, sell the house.
We would, gladly, if we could get anywhere near what it's worth.
What is it worth, really, Doug? You can't find a buyer who'll even make an offer except the Cochon Gris. And they think they're being very generous.
I won't be taken.
You inherited the house. Whatever you get is pure profit.
You really don't understand, do you?
I know that if you won't sell, then Helen will have to suffer.
Not if I stop seeing you.
That would be your choice.
And I'm making it. Right now. If you can let me walk away rather than ask a simple favor of people who owe you, then I'll walk.
Goodbye, my love.
Have I told you it's nice having you home for dinners again?
You have?
Oh, you're bored with me.
No. With myself. And you're going to have me home a lot more from now on.
That's very good news.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. I've lost my job.
You're kidding.
I wish I were. But they called me in yesterday with all sorts of excuses about cutbacks and economies and... Well, I'm out. I was the last man in, and now I'm the first man out.
Let's sell the house and get out of New Orleans. Oh, Doug, don't you see? It will be wonderful. We'll be starting all over again.
I'm back.
So I see.
May I come in?
What happened to your key?
I threw it away so I wouldn't be tempted to use it. But I couldn't stay away.
I'm glad.
Did you miss me?
Oh, Doug.
Oh, Zoe. Zoe, my love, my darling.
You don't know how much I missed hearing those words the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid you're going to miss them a lot more.
What?
I've lost my job, and Helen's at me to sell the house and get away from the city. And, incidentally, you.
Oh.
She no longer cares how little we get for it. She's completely fed up.
And you, Doug?
Well, it's very tough to put up a decent argument for staying.
If you could, would you stay?
How can I stay without money?
If it's money that separates us, you don't have to say goodbye at all.
Excuse me, love. I didn't know I was talking to a wealthy plantation owner.
I only meant I might be able to get you all the money you want.
The only friends I know you have are the tightwad Cochon Gris, who only want to pay a $7,800 for a $60,000 house.
They've been known to put a higher price on other things.
Like what?
Souls.
Oh. You know, you're really too much with that voodoo business. If there were anything to it, which you know I don't believe for a minute, I'd have to be crazy to be willing to sell my soul.
I didn't mention your soul, did I?
I can't sell what I don't own, and as far as I know, I only have one soul.
There are others you can pledge. Other souls you can speak for.
Would you care to put a name to that soul?
Anyone near and dear to you.
Like Helen?
She would be one.
I don't know whether to laugh or just walk out of here.
I'd never hurt you, Doug.
I mean, just what kind of a man do you think I am?
A man I can love.
Love? That word sounds very strange on your lips. The same lips that can talk about me selling my wife's soul.
Oh, go away. You're just like everyone else, crying about not having any money and not willing to pay the price for getting all you want, everything you want, including me.
Helen, what are you doing?
Packing. You can't seem to make up your mind, so I'm making it up for you. I told Mr. Vincent, the real estate agent, to take whatever he can for the house, and we're getting out. Tonight.
Oh, I've been expecting you. There's a café filtre on the coffee table.
Well, how did you know I'd come back?
Because I chose you. I couldn't make a mistake about the man I chose to love.
Well, when you stop patting yourself on the back, I'd better tell you that the only reason I'm back is because I don't believe any of this voodoo stuff. And that's why I'm willing to go along.
Of course.
And to prove it, I'm not going to make any deal where I have to shoot, stab, poison, or in any way do anything that's going to cause physical harm to Helen.
No one's going to ask that of you. All that's required is this knife and your blood.
If you're in love with a beautiful girl who practices voodoo and believes that a drop of your blood drawn from you by a sacred knife will bring you luck, why not? And from there, it's just a short step to making deals about souls, yours, and even others. Because after all, it doesn't really work. Or does it? I'll be back in a moment with Act Three.
When you buy a mid-sized car, you expect certain things from it. Mainly, a reasonable combination of comfort and economy. Well, friend, Buick has a mid-size to meet your expectations. The 1975 Century Regal. It's a joy to look at, a joy to ride in, and Buick's new V6 engine makes it a joy to drive, especially past gas stations.
Buick Century Regal, dedicated to the free spirit in just about everyone.
Hello, everybody. I'm Sherry Henry. Being stuck in a hospital or an institution's pretty bad any time of the year. But at Christmas, it's really rough, especially if you're a kid who's sick or doesn't have a family. But that's the case with thousands of children in the WOR area. Now, we can't take away their problems, but we can give them Christmas. We can let them know that Santa Claus can still find them. Send your check or money order to the WOR Children's Christmas Fund. That's Box 710, Times Square Station, New York, 10036.
I think all of us feel some small twinges of apprehension when we sit in a doctor's office waiting for the injection we know we must have. But how do you describe the feelings of a young man sitting opposite a girl he adores, who's wielding a ceremonial knife preparatory to drawing some blood?
Zoe, my love, you're beautiful and an enchantress. But somehow you look different with that knife in your hand. May I see it?
Be careful. It's very sharp.
And heavy.
It's pure gold.
I don't suppose you could use something smaller than this. It really looks lethal.
I could use a lot of different things, but then this paper would be meaningless.
Well, it's blank.
At the moment. It won't be after you write your wife's name on it.
Well, before I do that, what am I supposed to get?
As much money as you need. Or want.
Well, suppose I said I want $1 million.
The amount isn't important. Just trust me, and for 1 year, money will rain on your head in a golden shower.
And what happens after the year's up?
We'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
What have I got to lose?
Nothing. But before you write your wife's name, you know, of course, what she is losing.
Yeah, I know. I'm pledging her immortal soul. How is she, Doctor?
I'm afraid I don't have very good news for you, Mr. Fenton.
Haven't you found out yet what's wrong?
The tests are inconclusive, and none of the medication we've been giving her seems to be able to help.
Well, what is it? Is it a bug or a virus? Or what?
We just don't know. She's been asking for you.
Helen? Helen? I'm here.
Oh, Doc. You didn't have any trouble getting away from the office?
I keep telling you, darling, I'm my own boss now.
And if things keep going the way they are, I may even turn out to be a tycoon.
I'm dying, Doug.
No, Helen, please. Now, you mustn't even...
It's all right. You mustn't feel badly. The way things went since we came to New Orleans, I'm beginning to think that death might be the best thing for me.
Helen, I don't want you to talk that way.
Doug, I want you to promise me one thing. Just one thing, please.
Anything.
When I die...
No, please, now, will you stop talking about dying?
Please, Doug, listen to me. You must get out of that house. Get rid of it. Promise me, Doug, you'll never set foot again in that horrible house.
Oh, delicious. Mm. I do adore champagne.
Well, when are we going to make it all legal?
You mean with a wedding and everything like that?
Oh, and what a wedding. What a reception. And what a honeymoon. The biggest, most expensive...
Helen's been dead only 3 months. Not a very long period of mourning.
Who says?
A lot of people. Nasty, gossipy people.
Dull, stodgy people. Who cares about them?
Or what they say to your business associates.
What can they say?
That you became very rich very suddenly, that your wife died mysteriously, that I'm a witch, and that perhaps people should be careful about doing business with you.
Oh, yes, yes. I'd almost forgotten. It's all because of that voodoo group you fool around with, hmm?
You'll have to admit that everything happened after we went through the ceremony they told me to perform.
Right. I'll admit that first sugar deal on the commodities market was luck. But after that, give me a little credit. I got smart about commodities. And now I know what I'm doing. So, when do we get married, hmm?
Why is marriage so important to you?
You wouldn't be stalling me, would you, my love?
Don't be silly, Doug. Shouldn't you wait and see when your 1-year contract is up that your luck doesn't change?
Come in. Come in, L'Amour. Sit down.
Your offices are most impressive, Fenton. Most impressive.
You said that you wanted to see me on a matter of utmost urgency.
That's right. First, I owe you an apology.
For what?
For my cowardice.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The facts about your uncle's house, which I knew and withheld from you deliberately.
No. Forget it. I'm out of the house, and you have nothing to reproach yourself for.
I had heard you sold the house, and I also know the price. That suggested to me that you still had your reasons for...
Look, I just didn't want the trouble of looking around for buyers. I grabbed the first offer I got.
From Miss Lemaitre?
Something wrong with that?
I will be brief. I didn't tell you and your wife the history of the house because I was afraid. Afraid of the cochon gris. Afraid of the power of voodoo. Fenton, you're in danger.
Me?
Yes. How did your wife die?
Some unknown virus. Some kind of fluke, the doctor said.
Don't you think that's strange? An unknown disease in this day and age?
Look, L'Amour, you can believe what you want, but leave me out.
I can't. Because of your relationship with Miss Lemaitre, I beg of you one favor. Tonight, come with me and meet Louis Castan. It may be your only chance to save yourself.
I don't feel any need for salvation. Now, if you...
You've heard of Louis?
Never.
Louis Castan is a 90-year-old Cajun who's lived all his life in the bayous. He knows more about voodoo than any other human being. What are you doing?
Helping you out of my office, since you won't leave when I ask you to.
I'll gladly go. If you'll tell me you haven't let her talk you into making some kind of silly bargain.
Why did you say that?
So you have. You've sold your soul. Fenton, for the love of God, come with me to the bayou tonight. Louis, this is Douglas Fenton.
I hope we meet in time. No?
I'm here only because Mr. L'Amour's practically kidnapped me.
Mr. L'Amour's has lived in Louisiana a long time. He knows much about voodoo and Cajuns.
All right. All right. What do you have to tell me?
First, you tell me what you have done with the Bokor.
What the devil is a Bokor?
A very bad person. One who knows the darkest secrets of voodoo and uses them for evil ends. One who is pledged to Tambala Odeo, the great snake god.
This all sounds like something out of the Middle Ages.
No, Mr. Fenton. It is much older than that. Have you ever seen a knife like this?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I've seen a lot of knives.
But one like this you would remember, no? A pure gold knife with these writings.
But what if I have?
If you have only seen it, Mr. Fenton, that is well. But if it has drawn your blood, that is very bad.
How come you know so much about all this voodoo ritual?
I had a wife. I loved her much, yes. She loved other things more. She sold my soul, Mr. Fenton. Sold my soul to Dambala Odeo. I found out just in time, and I defeated her and her Bokor. But I paid a price. I cannot use my limbs. You see, Mr. Fenton, I must sit here until the end. But Dambala Odeo and I, we will fight, you understand?
And that's why you brought me here, Lamour, huh? Because you think I've fallen somehow under the spell of...
The Bokor Zoé Lemaître.
We are going to be married.
When?
We haven't set the date, but she has agreed to marry me.
She will not marry you. If, as I believe, she is Bokor, she will want to destroy you and take your soul. She will never marry.
I know you're wrong. Well, look, as long as I came here, what must I do if you're right?
She must follow the ritual for the sacrifice. She will ask you to perform some ancient marriage rite to strengthen the vows. It will be a powerful voodoo, and she will need a drug. And she will ask you to drink. If you drink, nothing can save you.
If she does ask me to go through this ceremony, is there anything I can do?
This bulletin from the WOR newsroom, the House of Representatives has confirmed Nelson Rockefeller as Vice President of the United States. Full details on the 8 o'clock news. Now, back to our program in progress.
You can use this knife. I give it to you.
The gold knife.
It is easily concealed in your clothing, as you see. And you will use it.
But I thought you said that this knife could only be used by a Bokor.
Oh, on a Bokor.
Where were you last night, my love? You're not the only one who's jealous, you know.
You never have to worry about me. You should know by now that I'm yours, my love, for life. Zoe? Are we going to get married?
Of course.
When?
Whenever you like.
You mean that? You really mean that?
You set the date.
Today?
Oh, really, Doc? You've got to give a girl a chance to get ready.
All right. Well, how about Saturday?
Saturday. Saturday sounds lovely. There's just one silly favor I'd like to ask.
Oh, anything. What?
Before the real wedding, with the minister and everything... I know it's superstitious, but you know you're Zoe. I just wouldn't feel that we were truly married unless we went through a little native ceremony that my family has observed in every marriage.
A native ceremony?
It's nothing, really. Just the two of us before an ancient altar. I know you'll think it's nonsense, but it means so much to me. So much that I don't think I can marry you unless you go through with it.
Well, This is my old house. Why do we have to come here?
Shh, don't ask so many questions. Just pretend we're playing some childish game. It will seem that way to you, Doug, but to me it's... Well, the way we've always done things.
What's that?
The altar.
But that statue, it's...
He looks frightening, but it's just an old statue of the snake god that blesses every marriage.
Zoe, please. You know I don't believe all this.
Oh.
Maybe you're used to the darkness and the candles and the drums, but...
Here, drink this and you'll feel better.
What's that?
A little ceremonial wine, darling. It was left on the altar for us. Drink it.
Do you really want me to drink from that goblet?
Yes.
You insist.
Darling, it's the only way. You will drink for me.
If you come into my arms and hold the goblet to my lips.
Now who's acting childish?
It's the only way.
All right. Here, dearest. Drink. Doug, you're holding me too tight. Doug, the knife. No. Dumba, help me.
I drank, my love. And now we'll be together always. Just the way you wanted it.
A friend of mine told me the story of an investigative reporter who penetrated some real voodoo ceremonies and photographed the strictly forbidden rites. The pictures somehow were ruined in development, and the journalist developed an unfortunate tic. His right hand, the hand that operates a camera, now moves ceaselessly in the air, completely out of control. The doctors diagnose it as a nervous disorder. But of course, they don't practice voodoo. I'll be back in a moment.
Would you like to take a winter vacation far, far away from Jack Frost? Then meet Stella Solaris, the SS Stella Solaris. She's a big, beautiful luxury liner. Costa Line offers you a 7-day air-sea holiday filled with sunshine aboard the Stella Solaris. It includes round-trip jet transportation to San Juan, Puerto Rico, and a full week aboard ship in the tropical Caribbean. Stop at exotic ports of call like Curacao, Caracas, Trinidad, Martinique, and St. Thomas. Enjoy the finest accommodations, all air-conditioned cabins with two lower beds, delicious gourmet meals, two swimming pools, night spots and entertainment, and first-class service. Come aboard and enjoy this unique vacation in the Caribbean. The Stella Solaris of Greek Registry has space available for cruises sailing on January 4th, 11th, and 18th. Don't wait. Make your reservations now. See your travel agent or call Costa Line, America's largest cruise ship company, at 212-682-3505. That's 682-3505.
Our cast included Joan Loring, Jordan Charney, Rene Roy, Dan Ockel, and Gilbert Mack. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser, and Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
The preceding program was furnished by the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Now, stay tuned for Fulton Lewis.
I'm Fulton Lewis in the Mutual Broadcasting System studios in Washington, D.C. Now, my commentary. State Department officials are still scratching their heads today in the wake of yesterday's strange and stunning statement by Soviet officials expressing their opposition to provisions of the Senate-approved trade bill relating to Kremlin restrictions on those wishing to emigrate from the Soviet Union. The House of Representatives is scheduled to vote on that trade bill tomorrow, and at this point, nobody is quite sure how the Kremlin's announcement will affect that vote. Yesterday, the Soviet Union officially flatly rejected as unacceptable
the provisions of the trade bill, which tie or relate to emigration of Jews and other minorities from communist countries. TASS, the official Soviet news agency, made the announcement, and the news landed with a thud, a loud thud here in Washington government circles. State Department officials were saying today that the Soviet position was unbelievable. There was no formal comment from the White House on the Kremlin's reaction to the trade bill. President Ford's aides declared, until we ascertain what the facts are, we'll have no reaction. Congressional action on the trade bill had been delayed for nearly 2 years by House and Senate insistence that no special favors or concessions be given the Soviet Union until and unless the Kremlin agreed to ease up on Soviet emigration regulations. The measure would give the Soviets most favored nation tariff treatment in their trade dealings with the United States under this bill. The Soviets would be handled as if they were one of our closest friends and staunchest allies. Most importantly, they would benefit from loan and long-term credit concessions. Nixon and Ford administration officials, attempting to secure passage of the trade bill for 2 years, fought vigorously to have the measure considered without any strings attached. But when it became very clear that neither the House nor the Senate would okay the bill without assurances of liberalized Soviet emigration policies, pressure was then applied on the Kremlin to try to get those assurances. Back in October, Secretary of State Kissinger assured Washington Democrat Senator Henry Jackson, the principal sponsor of the drive to condition the trade measure on the emigration issue, assured him that Moscow had informally agreed to allow upwards of 60,000 Soviet Jews to emigrate annually. And then, with that assurance, Senator Jackson moved to try to get speedy Senate approval of the trade bill. Just a few days after the Kissinger-Jackson agreement was announced, though, the Secretary of State issued a statement in which he seemed to be retreating from his earlier commitment, and that prompted the Senate Finance Committee to delay final approval of the trade bill until it heard further testimony from the Secretary of State. On December 3rd, Kissinger testified that if the trade bill giving the Soviet Union equal trading status were passed, in his words, "I do believe that we have every right to expect that the emigration rate will correspond to the number of applicants, and there will be no interference with applications." When pressed by members of the Senate Finance Committee on whether the Kremlin had formally agreed to a more liberalized emigration policy, Secretary of State Kissinger, back on December 3rd, stressed that the Soviet Union continues to consider the issue of emigration a matter of its own domestic legislation and practices, not subject to international negotiation. Kissinger concluded, quote, "With this as a background, I must state flatly that if I were to assert here that a formal agreement on emigration from the USSR exists between our governments, that statement would immediately be repudiated by the Soviet government." Well, despite that fairly clear-cut Kissinger warning, the Senate panel went ahead and approved the trade bill, and last Friday the measure was okayed by the full Senate. On Wednesday, in announcing Soviet opposition to language in the trade measure relating to emigration, the Soviet news agency TASS also published the text of a letter from Soviet Foreign Minister Andrei Gromyko to Kissinger, a letter that was reportedly handed to the Secretary of State back on October 26, a letter in which Gromyko stated that Kissinger had already been told about the present tendency toward a decrease in the number of persons wishing to leave the Soviet Union and seek permanent residence in other countries. Gromyko specifically said that the correspondence between Kissinger and Senator Jackson presented what he termed a distorted picture of Soviet-American discussions. He noted that the Kremlin had given no assurances that there would be an increase in the number of emigrants. Gromyko adding, quote, "What we said, and you, Mr. Secretary of State, know this well, concerned only and exclusively the real situation in the given question. And when we did mention figures to inform you of the real situation, the point was quite the contrary, namely about the present tendency toward a decrease in the number of persons seeking to emigrate from the Soviet Union." The TASS statement said that attachments to the trade bill requiring more liberalized emigration would directly contradict the Soviet-American agreement that was reached between former President Nixon and Soviet leader Brezhnev at their first summit meeting back in June of 1972. The statement said that the only basis upon which Soviet-American relations could be built was non-interference in each other's internal affairs, and it concluded, quote, "It is precisely on this basis and on this basis alone
that one can work confidently toward the further development of commercial and economic relations between the Soviet Union and the United States, just as with relations between them in general. As for the Soviet Union, it intends to continue to adhere strictly to this principle, end quote. Well, it's much too early to report any significant congressional reaction to the Soviet declaration, but you can be quite sure that there's going to be lots of loud and bitter complaining when the issue is brought up in the House debate tomorrow. Many members of Congress are going to feel that they have been had by Secretary Kissinger, and Kissinger, in turn, is likely to feel that he has been betrayed by the Kremlin. The mood of the Congress had been, and from every indication, that mood remains to be, that the United States should make no trade concessions to the Soviet Union if the Kremlin refuses to ease earlier restrictions against emigration. Now that the Kremlin has asserted in no uncertain terms that it will not accept any conditions relating to U.S.-Soviet trade, the Congress, if it does remain consistent with its earlier position, will have no choice but to rescind the provisions in the trade measure extending special trade concessions to the Soviet Union. I think the real irony of the situation is that the TASS announcement came only 2 days before the House of Representatives was going to vote on legislation that would suspend all U.S. trade with the southern African nation of Rhodesia because of that country's domestic political policies. Back in 1966, the United Nations Security Council decreed a ban on any and all international trade with any Rhodesian interests because of Rhodesia's refusal to replace its predominantly white government with an all-black one. Compliance with that UN directive placed American ferroalloy companies in a serious position of not being able to import Rhodesian chrome ore for use in the production of stainless steel. Being in that situation, they had to turn to the world's only other major source of this mineral, which just happened to be the Soviet Union. That dependency upon the Kremlin for a material that is essential to our national defense industries literally alarmed national security experts, and in 1971, the Congress passed legislation exempting chrome from the U.S. boycott, that, of course, being the amendment sponsored by Virginia Senator Harry F. Byrd, Jr. Last January, though, the Senate reversed its earlier position, and it approved legislation sponsored by Minnesota Democrat Senator Hubert Humphrey, which, in effect, repeals the Byrd Amendment. The Humphrey measure requiring a halt in all U.S. trade with Rhodesia is currently under consideration in the House of Representatives. As of this hour, no House vote has been taken. It is now scheduled for tomorrow. Well, the real question, the obvious question, I think, is how can the United States government possibly rationalize bestowing special trade concessions on a sworn enemy, the Soviet Union, when it simultaneously suspends all trade, including purchases that are necessary for our own national defense, with a country, Rhodesia, which has historically been a strong ally? If the Congress can somehow turn the other cheek with respect to Soviet emigration policies and the overall issue of Soviet persecution of Jews, why does it find it so difficult to excuse Rhodesia's domestic racial practices? I will take a close look at the pertinent roll call votes tomorrow to see just which members of Congress want to make unwarranted concessions to our enemies while slapping a friend in the face. From the Mutual Studios in Washington, I'm Fulton Lewis, and that's the top of the news as it looks from here.